Hello, this is Roz from World Have Your Say. This is a download from the BBC. If you want to get more information and read our terms of use, you'll find them at bbcworldservice.com/podcasts. Here's today's show.
Hello, this is World Have Your Say, the BBC's interactive programme where you set the agenda. I'm Chloe Tilley.
The marvellous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people.
Well, 40 years after the death of Martin Luther King, you can talk to the US academic who says he failed the civil rights movement. And is this man the realization of his dream?
We are one people and one nation, and our time for change has come.
Professor Jonathan Farley tells us a black king did not redeem us, and neither will a black president. You can post a question to him now on our blog at worldhaveyoursay.com, part of the BBC's Global Conversation.
We've had the news from the BBC. Now it's our turn. Call us on country code 44 20 70 83 72 72. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hello, I'm Chloe Tilley and this is World Have Your Say from the BBC. We're an open news programme where you set the agenda. Today we're talking to the US professor who delivered this judgment on the legacy of Martin Luther King. He built nothing and taught us only how to take a beating. So, did the late Dr. King and the civil rights movement fail African Americans? And as the Democratic candidates in the US presidential race battle for the black vote, are there similarities between King and Barack Obama?
I'm Peter Van Dyke, I'll be reading your messages during the programme. Stefan on the blog says Martin Luther King was a great man and you can't judge what he did by our failure as a society. And Maya Woman on the Guardian blog says I wanted to cheer when I read the article. It took a lot of guts to buck the Martin Luther King hagiography and to say what needed to be said.
You can post a comment now or indeed a question on our blog at worldhaveyoursay.com. Well, Dr. Jonathan Farley's comments originally were published in the British newspaper The Guardian. It's got a lot of you talking, so we've invited him on to take your questions. You can text him now from your mobile phone. The number is country code 44 77 86 20 60 80. Well, thanks for joining us today. We wanted you to get in touch about these comments made by Dr. Jonathan Farley. He now is at the California Institute of Technology, but he's a former Martin Luther King professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Now, Dr. Farley says the civil rights movement was flawed and Martin Luther King failed it. Well, those comments have already got you talking on the blog. If you haven't read this article yourself, it is posted on our blog. You can read it at worldhaveyoursay.com. But first of all, welcome, Dr. Farley, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Well, first of all, for those people who haven't seen this article, just briefly outline the main points and your thinking behind it.
Well, let me tell you why I wrote it. 5 years ago, I wrote an essay in Nashville, Tennessee, which is in the southern part of the U.S., about a man named Nathan Bedford Forrest, who happened to found the Ku Klux Klan, of course, the notorious racist terrorist organization. And he, even though he died in 1877, I pointed out that this man should not be honored as he was then being honored in Nashville with a statue. And I pointed out that if he were alive today, he would be subject to the same punishment that was meted out to the Nazi leaders. This got me in a considerable amount of trouble. I got death threats, a few dozen of those, about 800 hate messages via email. Even my employer at the time, Vanderbilt University, weighed in and started attacking me. And I realized, what is going on behind all of this? It's not that the facts I put in the essay were wrong. It's that I sounded angry in putting those facts on paper. So I realized that the legacy of Martin Luther King was such that we all have to sound like him, or else we get accused of being murderous or dangerous.
And therefore that means that he failed the civil rights movement?
I say the civil rights movement itself was a failure. Its aims and goals were immensely flawed. They talked about integration as if that was what we should be looking for, when really we should have been looking for economic empowerment. There's no reason why you have to sit next to a white person in order to learn. Now, it might get you more dollars in your community, or more money might be sent to your schools if you're at a white school. But that shouldn't have been the primary aim of the civil rights movement.
This article's been out there for about a week now. I'm assuming you've had quite a lot of reaction to this, and presumably some opposition.
I have seen it on the Guardian website, yes. But mostly I've gotten positive comments.
OK. Well, we're obviously going to be getting texts and emails and callers who will be speaking to you a little bit later on in the programme. Now, interesting as well in this article, and we will go into it in more depth in a moment, but you made the link to Barack Obama yourself. What do you see as the similarities between Martin Luther King and Barack Obama?
Well, I don't want to bash Barack because my brother played basketball with him in law school. My brother would be pretty upset if I did that. But it's not so much that I see similarities between Obama and Martin Luther King. It's that Obama does not actually represent what we should be looking for. He can, at best, portray himself as a neutral candidate, as someone who is definitively not the black candidate, or else his popularity will fade. In fact, actually, it will explode and go down to nothing. That's why the recent dispute between Obama and Hillary Clinton over the legacy of Martin Luther King was actually bad for Obama, because he didn't want people to think that he was the black candidate.
OK, well, we want people to get in touch with you. You're here for the whole hour today, so we want people to call us, to text us, to email us. You can call us now, country code 44 20 70 83 72 72. Or if you want to email, you can instead worldhaveyoursay@bbc.co.uk. Well, also joining us in the studio here in London is Candace Allen, a writer, and she's also from Americans Abroad from Obama. Just listening to Dr. Farley's thoughts there, what immediately comes to mind? What's your reaction to what he said?
Well, I think he certainly underestimates the legacy of Dr. King. Now, there is about 20 years of age between Dr. Farley and myself, and so I grew up, I'm African-American, and grew up as a desegregator in a white community in Connecticut. I went on the March on Washington. I heard Dr. King speak in a church in my town. I went to Harvard and became very disillusioned with nonviolence. In that, I believe that Dr. Farley and I are have similar ideas. But interestingly, after being extremely militant, considering whether or not to bring guns on campus, etc., in the summer of 1970, after the killings at Kent State and Orangeburg State, or Jackson State and Orangeburg, Mississippi, I went down to Atlanta, Georgia, to work in the congressional race of Andrew Young for my sins. I'm very disappointed in him at the moment. And I met for the first time people who had worked en masse in the what I call the first wave of black student revolt and involvement, the people of the original SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which, of course, had turned to black power under H. Rapp Brown and Stokely Carmichael, and SCLC, Dr. King's organization. And I, in a sense, my breath was taken away by my ignorant arrogance of discounting the power of grassroots religion and also the willingness of people to put their lives on the line to bring about change. Now, I think that Dr. Farley is being somewhat disingenuous by this notion. Yes, of course, there were people who thought black and white together and everything's going to be sunshine and flowers and so forth. But basically, it was the whole integration movement was to get access to money. And that was why people wanted to be, went for integration. Now, as we became angrier and more informed about what the essence of America was, and as Rap Brown famously said, violence is American as cherry pie, as opposed to apple pie. And we did not need the Vietnam War to tell us, to teach us that there was, that violence was endemic into American society. But still, going down and seeing the power of Dr. King. I mean, I was at a point in 1968, just before he died. I was a freshman in college and completely disillusioned by his nonviolent approach. I thought it was nonsense. But when I heard the speech the evening before and then heard that he'd been assassinated while I was driving up a road, I almost ran into a tree. And I found that, you know, what he did in terms of helping us get on our feet and do something. And he was a galvanizer. You cannot devalue that, diminish that value, the worth of that. But interestingly enough, I was talking to my 83-year-old aunt in the car here, and she grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and her mother was a high school teacher. My father and she were brought on protests and picketing in the 30s when they were young children. And my grandmother, whom I did not know because she died when I was three, said that nothing's going to change in the United States until blood has been shed on this ground.
What question would you put to Dr. Farley reading his article? Because I know that there are things that you don't agree with him on.
Well, I have been doing some journalism as well, and I do understand that people do kind of encourage the argumentative bits. I think, and I'm not entirely sure, I would like to know if Dr. Farley's implied displeasure or... Well, not displeasure. I wouldn't put it that way. His disagreement.
Ask him. He's there.
You know,
Dr.
Farley.
Yes.
The inference here is that you don't respect Dr. King, but I suspect that that is not right. Could you tell me?
No, actually, I do not respect Martin Luther King. In fact, I agree with you that if the whole aim behind the integration movement was simply to get access to funds, then that is perhaps worthwhile. But I've seen I can't say I've seen any statements to that effect. Every Martin Luther King celebration is about how wonderful it is just to have integration for its own sake. And in fact, if you were to say, well, why don't we have all black schools, but let's make sure that they're as get as much funding as the fancy schools in Beverly Hills or whatnot. I actually haven't heard anyone say that. You would be shouted down as some kind of racist, as a reverse Klansman or something like that, much like what I experienced when I wrote my essay about the founder of the Ku Klux Klan.
We've got lots of calls coming in. You're listening to World Have Your Say. We're talking about what Martin Luther King did for African Americans. Jason in Orlando's called in with a question for Dr. Farley.
Hi, Dr. Farley. Again, my name is Jason. I work in Orlando, and I'm an African American. Not that that qualifies me to debate with someone of your stature, but I would like to ask you a simple question. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Here's the question. Martin Luther King, for better or worse, represents in this country the civil rights movement. Would you agree or disagree with that statement?
Yes, he does represent now the civil rights movement. Although, as Candace correctly pointed out, there are lots of people who have been placed on the sidelines of history. H. Rat Brown, for example, is, as far as I know, languishing on death row somewhere, and we don't have any campaign to free him.
Okay, so I will definitely agree with you there. But I would say this. I think what you do is you diminish the actual accomplishments of the civil rights movement when you, and I wouldn't say attack, I would say assail the record of Martin Luther King. This was not a man who spent time looking out for himself. This is not a person who whose entire life course was spent on the generation of power. His beliefs, and stated openly and privately, was to try to promote the sense of equality in this country and show the inequalities that this country had and still has to some extent. I think you would have to look at the record, especially in the South, regarding segregation, separate water fountains, separate restaurants. I remember my grandmother actually had to walk on the other side of the street when a white woman or a white person appeared, because obviously she was not allowed to walk on the same side, or she might be disrespected in some way. She might be hurt. In some areas, she would have been lynched for even looking at a white person with any sort of disrespect. And I think Martin Luther King, the movement at least that he spearheaded, changed the attitudes of many people in this country. And I think your article with facts and figures, I think you gloss over that. You look, sure, I know that facts and figures do represent change, but also change is represented in the attitudes of people, which you cannot measure with a scientific number or with any sort of mathematical accuracy.
Well, I'm a mathematician, but I agree with you. Everything can't be reduced to numbers. However, and I'm not an historian, but I would say that historians have also glossed over the achievements of other people who weren't part of Martin Luther King's movement. For example, maybe your grandmother could start walking on the same side of the street as white people because of the efforts of people like Robert F. Williams, the hero of Monroe, North Carolina, author of the book Negroes with Guns, who said, not that we're going to go out and attack white people for no reason, but if the Klan comes to attack us, we're going to defend ourselves, which even Martin Luther King agreed was a moral right of people. So it may not have been thanks to Martin Luther King that your grandmother, or you for that matter, could now walk on the same side of the street as a white person.
Now, I have to strongly disagree with you there, because violent action would not have changed this culture. You know, it's easy to sit back now and say, well, it's because of this person's efforts, maybe, or because of this person's, maybe. But I think you would have to agree that even though there are many, many different players that made a difference in the civil rights movement, you would ultimately have to say that nonviolence changed the culture, because it showed people that these are ordinary Americans. These are not violent or evil people who are seeking to get power for themselves. These are people who are protesting peacefully. And these images were shown on TV of African Americans being beaten. These images were transmitted around the world. It could not be denied that there was inequities in this culture that needed reparations. They needed repair.
Have we gotten any reparations? I'm not certain. My check hasn't come in the mail, but I haven't checked my mailbox lately.
I'm not sure if you're an African American who believes that we deserve reparations for slavery.
Yes, I am.
You are. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I would say that goes completely against Martin Luther King's record. I think that attitude that you have, unfortunately, will not promote any sort of racial equality in the future.
I don't understand why it wouldn't, because if we don't get the reparations, then in fact, we're not going to be equal. We'll remain unequal. In fact, that's exactly what Lyndon Johnson was talking about when he said you can't start a race with one person 100 yards ahead and the other person 100 yards behind with shackles on his ankles.
I, for one, if I may interject, I suspect, lived the era in which both of you guys possibly didn't sound, you know, but first of all, I also do not agree in reparations. I think it's a distraction from people needing to do what they need to do for themselves and their own responsibility. And to use all of the energy it would take to get reparations. Yes, they owe us. They absolutely owe us. But it's like when you're going up to get an insurance payment and your life stops while you try and get this big insurance payout, you lose some of your own initiative in trying to set yourself to get this money. Now, in terms of King, you know, I think you would find in looking at the discussion between leaders in the civil rights movement on both sides of the agenda, that there was a respect for all the Mau-Mauing, the flag catcher ritual warfare that many of us went through, there was an understanding that both sides were needed, both the promise and indeed reality of violence. None of us who, you know, we all knew that some of the pressure that brought certain laws into place and so forth came from the pressure of the urban disturbances, et cetera. But also that the humanity, the actual strength of people being willing to stand up against dogs and clubs for their human dignity. And I think that there really was a question at that time as to whether or not human dignity was a Caucasian, they had hegemony over human dignity, which, of course, is ridiculous.
Daniel, listening on KLW in San Francisco, says, Dr. King taught us all that there is light at the end of the tunnel. The problem is that after his death, seeing the light was all we settled for. And Jean in Chicago says, as important as Dr. King was and still is to the civil rights movement, civil rights is not just one idea and one goal. You can comment on the blog worldhaveyoursay.com.
Jason in Orlando, thank you for your call. We can now speak to Marcy in Detroit, a friend of World Have Your Say.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Now, one thing I would like to say is I did read his statement, and I would like to ask one question, if it's okay.
Do by all means. Dr. Farley is listening.
Yes. It seems like you're being a little bit of an armchair quarterback. In America, we are getting set for the Super Bowl next week, and your statements are no different than my fiancé when he's looking at which team won and why they won and why they lost. And it's disturbing in a way, because I do respect your abilities as a mathematician, but it's a little bit disturbing because do you really feel you have the ability to say in 20 years, in 50 years, that your viewpoint right now is really one of the best?
Dr. Farley, do you want to answer that?
Yes, well, actually, Gandhi said, quote, if having said yes or no, one finds out that the decision was wrong and in spite of that knowledge clings to it, that is obstinacy and folly. And so there's nothing wrong with evaluating what King did 40 years later and then saying, well, that was a bad decision. I'm not saying that maybe in 1963 I would have done something different, but now we know that it failed. Everything that he worked for, he failed to achieve. He took his approach because he wanted to transform the hearts of white Americans. He failed to do that. White Americans don't even acknowledge that anything wrong was done to African Americans that would warrant reparations.
Sorry.
So the issue isn't even an issue of whether or not we should get it. It's an issue of whether, how we get it. It's an issue of do they even deserve it.
Sure.
But in fact, I do want to say that in 1955, I would not have adopted this kind of silly idea that when people bomb your churches, when they lynch you, that you, as a philosophical position, adopt what Martin Luther King called nonviolence, which I want to point out, the opposite of nonviolence is not violence. So that's a crucial issue that creates lots of problems for people, so that when you even sound angry, as people tend to think I do for some reason, just when I recite facts about history, when you even sound angry, they accuse you of being murderous. And several times people have said, I might even be held legally liable if there's any racial rioting as a result of my writings. And that
well,
is
sir,
the legacy of Martin Luther King.
I would like to say that I don't feel that you are being negative. I think you are a mathematician, and I've met a few statisticians in my life, and they sometimes do look at numbers. I live in Detroit, and to be perfectly honest, I think it's one of the most segregated regions in America, if not the world. But still, even with that, I don't feel that some of Martin Luther King's visions were not just his visions, they were godly visions. They come from the Bible. It is scripture to talk about turning other cheek. It is scripture to talk about if you're in it.
Marcy, I'm going to have to stop you there because we're coming up to the news. We will get the response from Dr. Farley and from Candice Allen after the news.
You heard the news from the BBC. Now it's your turn. Call us on Country Code 442070 837272. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hello, I'm Chloe Tilley. Welcome back to World Have Your Say. Today we've been talking about what Martin Luther King did for black people. It follows comments by a US academic that King built nothing and taught us only how to take a beating. Dr. Jonathan Farley also argues that the aims and the character of the civil rights movement were flawed. You've been talking to him and putting your questions to him. Keep them coming.
I'm Peter Van Dyke, reading your messages. Karistos from Nigeria says Martin Luther King turned civilization on its head, and black people are not the only people who have benefited. He changed the way humanity sees itself and how we see one another. Isabel, listening in San Francisco, says, of course Martin Luther King made a difference. The question you should be asking is, does nonviolence work?
You can text us from your mobile phone throughout the programme. The number is country code 4477 86 20 60 80, and you can post on our blog now at worldhaveyoursay.com. Well, welcome back. Marcy from Detroit was in full flow just before we had to cut her short to get the news. So, Dr. Farley, do you want to come back on the points that Marcy raised?
Yes, the Bible could be used to justify any viewpoint, but in the Old Testament, there are plenty of cases where God is laying waste to entire cities, if not countries. So the fact that Martin Luther King was following his idea of the Bible doesn't really matter much to me. And in fact, Jesus said, I bring not peace but a sword.
I guess I still really don't agree with that point of view, because just like Gandhi, just like Martin Luther King, you do get more when you turn the other cheek.
Well, Gandhi actually said that if the...
You can't fight every battle. You cannot fight every angry word with an angry word. That's just two angry people. You become the better person when you do turn the other cheek. You become the better person when you can reason in an intellectual way. And I do sometimes believe there is a time to fight. I am not one of those people who believe turn the other cheek all the time, but I do believe that probably 9 times out of 10, you do turn the other cheek.
Marcy in Detroit, thank you very much for your call. We've got lots coming in now. We do have to move on, because I want to try and fit as many in as we can in the next 25 minutes. We'll go over to Melissa, who's called from Dallas in Texas.
Hi, Dr. Farley.
Hi.
I'd like to hear your opinion on whether you believe that Hillary Clinton can further the cause of civil rights, or can only a black man do that?
Well, theoretically, I suppose anyone could do that. John Brown, the great abolitionist from the 19th century, did quite a bit, and he was white. However, the question is, will she? Even though I don't have a crystal ball, I think we can look back at history and see that all of the white politicians in this country that we've placed our hopes in have actually failed us as well. It would be kind of idiotic to assume that Hillary Clinton, just because she is married to Bill Clinton and Bill Clinton's hair is a bit frizzy, she's our savior.
Okay.
Thank you for your call, Melissa. That's Melissa from Dallas in Texas. In a moment, we'll speak to Yuzondu in Liberia. But first, Kevin in Trinidad.
Hi. There was a comment just now about violence, that it works. It doesn't work. We see in Israel and Palestine, violence is not working. In the short term, violence works, but in long term, people just keep on doing it to each other, and it just accomplishes nothing. With the Bible, there's a difference. It's the Old Testament and the New Testament. And Jesus Christ was for a change to the Old Testament. And it was this violence that destroyed and killed him. So I don't think violence is a good thing in any way.
Kevin, in Dr. Farley's defense, I think I'm right in saying, Dr. Farley, that you didn't say that the opposition of nonviolence was specifically violence.
And in fact, that is my main point, that the opposite of nonviolence is not violence. And that was one of the problems. That's one of the worst legacies of the civil rights movement, that everyone assumes that just because you disagree with Martin Luther King, then therefore you're the moral equivalent of a murderer.
Do you want to just elaborate on that point, Dr. Farley? So explain to us what you mean by it doesn't have to mean violence.
Well, Martin Luther King said that in a nonviolent movement, you should avoid violence of the heart, brain, and tongue. Something like that. I'm not sure what violence of the tongue is. Maybe it means licking someone to death. But I don't see any reason why you should hold your tongue even. I can understand perhaps as a practical measure not physically striking back while you are physically weaker, but then you organize till you're physically stronger. Martin Luther King wanted us to actually love the people who were attacking us, and I see no reason for that, and I don't see any value in it. And in fact, well, Gandhi, of course, also had made many different statements which weren't exactly consistent, but Gandhi also said things like, if the capacity for nonviolent self-defense is lacking, there need be no hesitation in using violent means. So we can't say that even Gandhi would definitely have been behind everything that Martin Luther King said.
If I may interject, Dr. Farley, I think that that regardless of Dr. King's words about loving everyone and so forth, he was a preacher after all, and this is the message of Christianity, that there are many of us who respect his contribution, were inspired in our private lives, even if we did diverge from his approach, who felt that there was a value in his leadership. Even, you know, I do not believe that you have to love everybody. I feel that you have to recognize everyone's humanity, and it is best to work in, you know, what I talk about is in, you know, informed self-interest, you know, that sometimes your best, it is in your best interest to be loving somebody, and sometimes it is in your best interest to come down hard, and you know, some people could interpret that as loving people in the end of it. I am not a religious person. However, the power of his words and his example is what I bring to what I do further. I you know, getting beat upside the head and then turning around and you know, kissing the assaulter is not something that I came up with, and not something that my father had a shotgun in Stamford, Connecticut, when people got upset because our dog had bitten some child, and he, you know, his attitude was, if somebody comes to get me, a lot of them are going to die. But you know, this is ingrained in survival. But there was a point, unfortunately, that we have to acknowledge, that the humanity of African Americans was questioned. It is disgusting, perhaps, that we had to demonstrate our humanity by taking so much abuse. But yes, something did change. I lived through the change. You know, I did. I wasn't able to eat, you know, at soda fountains, and saw the difference in terms of social and educational change. It was not the be-all and the end-all. It did not deliver what we hoped it would be. But is it better than it was? Absolutely.
No, I agree that we are better off now than we were in the days of apartheid. What I'm saying is we haven't reached the promised land, and things are still pretty bad. And the goals that Martin Luther King wanted to reach were very far away from accomplishing in terms of unemployment rate, in terms of median income, and so forth. But getting back to the nonviolence issue, Ida B. Wells said that a rifle should have a place of honor in every black home. So let's give her a holiday. And Che Guevara said that the revolutionary is guided by great love. So you can love someone and still take care of business.
I would love to have Ida B. Wells have a holiday. I think she was a most extraordinary woman.
More people are calling us all the time, so I want to thank Kevin from Trinidad for that call. But we can go now to Uzondo in Liberia. I hope I've pronounced your name right.
Yeah, that's correct, Uzondo. Well, I would like to make this point. Mr. King did one thing that for me stood out. He made people to look at themselves and bring out the valuable things they had in themselves. Martin Luther King loved people, but he taught people to love themselves. He made the black people to have value for themselves and made them to fight for what they had in them. And as a result, today we see what the blacks are doing in America. For me, I think that stood out. And then he was this nonviolent issue is something that I should raise out 2 years because. Yeah, in Africa, as a black African, we see the kind of violence that's coming out of Africa. And if we have people like Martin Luther King here in Africa today, he will be doing a great job here to help people to leave violence. So I think Martin Luther King did a whole lot in helping people back there. I think he stood out for me.
Yuzanda, I'm going to have to stop you there because the line isn't good, but just to surmise, you're saying that Martin Luther King taught people to love themselves, and if there was a Martin Luther King in Africa now, there wouldn't be the problems and the violence. Do you agree with that, Dr. Farley?
Actually, I disagree. Martin Luther King taught us to love the people who were attacking us. As Martin Luther King himself said, I said it in my essay, but people attacked me on the website, but Martin Luther King said this: if you go to any hospital on the weekend in the black community, you'll see plenty of Negroes there with gunshot wounds, knife wounds, and so on. So he actually completely failed to teach us the nonviolent way with ourselves. But I agree with you. If we practiced it with ourselves, we would be much, much better off.
Yuzanda, thank you for that call. We can go over to Stafford now, who's listening on KALW in San Francisco in California.
Hi, thank you. Dr. Farley, earlier in the show you said that there was no point for black and white children to sit next to each other in order to be able to learn. But to me, integration wasn't about learning. It was about actually breaking down societal walls. It was about being with each other so that at some point, just by physically being next to each other, black and white kids and kids of all races could learn to see each other as human beings and not just as a member of a specific race. Segregation is all about separation. Separation equals ignorance, fear, and violence. And unfortunately, the seeds of success that Dr. King had planted have fallen on the infertile ground of the Reagan Revolution and the other problem that affects our country, which is not just racism, but classism. And unfortunately, what I hear you talking about most of the time is not just about the race problem, but about money. And I have no problem with reparations. Let's go ahead and do it. If throwing money at this issue is going to solve the problem, then great. But I don't think that that's the only answer. And I think integration was a crucial, crucial, crucial aspect of getting us to see each other more as humans. And that has completely been eroded by people like you who want to get rid of affirmative action, people who want to get rid of integration, and people who don't want black and white kids to sit with each other just to actually get to know each other as human beings.
Actually, you're putting words in my mouth. I'm not against having blacks and whites sit next to each other. I'm saying that we should not have assumed that that was the be-all and end-all, and that by sitting next to a white kid, somehow knowledge magically flows into my head. That can happen in a separate school and did happen in separate schools in the 1950s, does happen in all black schools throughout Africa and the Caribbean.
About education. Of course children are going to be able to learn together. It's about the fact that they're actually sitting with each other, that they get to know each other beyond the educational environment. And that extends, once that happens, that can extend into their lives beyond school. Once they graduate from school, they can continue to see each other as human beings and not just black people and white people or Hispanic people and Asians. That's
I agree with the Black Panthers.
Just because of learning. It's not just about learning. It's about being with each other.
Well, normally I agree with the Black Panthers, but Eldridge Cleaver said something I strongly disagreed with. He said that just by having white students dance to black music, that eventually they will all learn to see each other as equals. But now we have Justin Timberlake and Eminem. We have Elvis Costello using the N-word to describe Ray Charles. They love our culture. They dance to our music, but they do not still respect us in many cases.
This has nothing to do with integration, but I appreciate the opportunity to being able to speak.
I'm not sure why it doesn't have anything to do with integration. It has to do with cultures
because
merging.
We're talking about popular culture. We're talking about education. You're dismissing integration because you say that it has nothing to do with a black child being able to learn any better.
It doesn't, actually. You can learn without sitting next to someone.
Together.
You can also respect someone. I respect the Chinese, and I've never been to China. So I don't see why I have to sit next to someone, and for that to be the only way.
Well,
I agree that the days of apartheid are over.
If I might interject, I do feel, although that there was, as I said, a hearts and flowers and sunshine and rainbows thing that was brought into all of this about people beginning to learn about one another by sitting next to one another, that you do know, I'm sure, that the point of the whole integration of schools was to give, because everyone knew that the money was going to the white schools. Now, there were spectacular black African-American schools. My family in Richmond went to schools where, of course, half the faculty are PhDs because they can't do anything else. Now, those were spectacular. But on the whole, you're talking about, sheds with no equipment, no facilities, no heat, no nothing. People can't learn the same things that are out in South Carolina now for both black and white kids. And that the point was that they would go to white schools so they could get some of the bennies, the financial and academic bennies. It wasn't about let's all love one another. Now, you have a plan. You have a plan to get something accomplished. And Dr. King was a minister. And many of us, as I've said, who were involved with this were not religious, believed in the vision. However you get there, however, if it meant loving one another, whatever, to get to a point where there would be equal possibilities. It was not going to be, regardless of what the Nation of Islam was doing. The Panthers were doing their small stuff with the breakfast clubs and everything else. Yes, that was wonderful. But by and large, in order to get, federal funds and people brought to this, we had to deal with the notion of bringing it all together. We know very well that some of the best schools for particularly urban African-American children are segregated schools because they have been so beaten down by the lingering prejudices and lack of expectation both in the faculties and within their own communities that to be in a school where it's just about them is preferable. But I think you're being really disingenuous.
I actually don't think I am, but let me make a side point that the Black Panther Party's breakfast program fed thousands upon thousands of children, and it was considered so important that J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI, said the Panthers were the greatest threat to the internal security of the country, not because they carried around guns, but because of their free breakfast for children program. As far as black teachers are concerned, thousands upon thousands of black teachers and principals lost their jobs. And so now, in 2005 in South Carolina, we had a program called Call Me Mister, where they wanted to recruit black teachers. So they obviously think that something went awry. How far have we gone? In Nashville, Tennessee, where I used to live, there was a desegregation lawsuit with the school system that was continuing after 32 years. So if you think desegregation is good, well, then let's just get it done. Let's not wait 32 years or 50 years for these cases to be resolved. We still have segregated schools. We just don't have the laws on the books.
We've got lots of calls still coming in. Pear in Portland and Oregon will come to you shortly. Louise in Philadelphia, please hang on the line. You can hear a rather noisy stadium there. Ross, of course, this week is in Ghana. He's listening to this debate at a very noisy stadium in Ghana. Am I right in thinking you're watching a game, Ross? But we'll talk about that in a minute. First of all, you've got a guest who wants to talk to Dr. Farley on this issue.
Hi, Chloe. Yeah, everyone's just filing out of the ground. I'll tell you, the final whistle has just gone 1-1 between the teams playing here, Guinea versus Namibia. We'll come to the football in a moment because Inkasen has been listening as well as we can, to be honest, because it's a contest between World Have Your Say and the new Takdi Redeemer Brass Band, and it's even Stevens at the moment. But Inkasen, you had a question for Dr. Farley.
Yes, I have a question for Dr. Farley. Dr. Farley here, could you give me an example, a sublime example of a situation where perhaps violence was the antidote or perhaps the panacea? Because as far as I'm concerned, violence breeds only violence.
I actually can't give an example because if I do, then I'll be assaulted by other people who say I'm a murderer. But the American Civil War ended slavery. World War II, I think, was not a nonviolent protest. Just to give two examples. Ended slavery, and World War II was not a picnic.
So the American Civil War, World War II, two examples. Do you accept those?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, there is a big difference between maybe violence and aggressiveness. Violence you come at someone offensively, he's going to come at you defensively. At the end of the day, you see that we'll have lots and lots of divisions, lots and lots of distractions, and it will take some time and indeed some economic effects as well.
And Nixon, let me ask you, let me just ask quickly, Chloe, if I could, because people were probably thinking, Nixon, Ghana's just celebrated its 50th birthday. Didn't Ghana benefit from violence and gaining its independence?
Well, I would say indeed that we did not really benefit from violence. The violence that you are talking about comes as a result of those government pullovers with respect to the Ghanaians themselves. But violence did not and was not the panacea to us winning our independence. It was a matter of dialogue.
Rolls, very briefly, because it is noisy and you are winning just over and above the band. Remind us what happened in the football at the Sekondi Takoradi Stadium and, of course, why you're in Ghana this week.
OK, well, it finished 1-1 here between Guinea and Namibia, but there weren't two cheers for the two goals. There were four cheers during this game because most of the people in here were more interested in what was happening 3 hours east up the road in Accra, because Ghana had beaten Morocco 2-0. Mentari and Essien, two of the big stars of the Black Stars, scoring two goals, sending them through as top of Group A. So there's a lot of relieved people, and that brass band in the background were far more concerned with the action up the road than here. But for the record, Namibia drew 1-1 with Guinea. Suleiman Yula opening the scoring for Guinea, and then a fantastic goal through the centre from Brian Brendel, who then, having scored, ran all the way around the pitch, which was an impressive effort. None of his teammates managed to keep up. Now, football aside, tomorrow we're going up to Tarkwa, which is a mining town about an hour north of Takoradi Sekondi, and the reason we're going there is twofold, really. One, we've got a good partner station called Dynamite FM, who are very keen to host World Have Your Say, and we're delighted to help them out on that front. And two, because we want to understand how the wealth that's generated by natural resources, such as gold, for instance, here in Ghana, is shared amongst all people. Because a lot of people listening to the BBC in Ghana are saying, well, it's all very well having gold, we've got oil on the way, it's just been discovered, but how can we be sure that's going to benefit not just the owners of the businesses getting those natural resources out of the ground, but all the other people who are involved in working in that business. So the programme is on Wednesday. We're going up there tomorrow to get it set up. And if anyone listening has got a question for a Ghanaian miner and life in a Ghanaian mining town, email worldhaveyoursay@bbc.co.uk or text on the usual number, country code 447786 2060.
Thanks, Ros. We'll be tuning in on Wednesday. Now we can go to Pear, who's listening in Portland, Oregon, on APB.
Yes, I don't think King failed. He was not allowed to succeed. He was threatening by coming out against the war in Vietnam, and he was planning the Poor People's March on Washington. He was threatening the Washington warlords, and they were the ones who had him assassinated. In 1999, the King family won a Memphis jury verdict that Dr. King was killed by a conspiracy. Now, that verdict still stands. It has never been followed up upon. King was assassinated by the war machine because he was perhaps on the verge of succeeding.
Well, this, to me, is another example of how he failed. We love his speech on April 3rd, 1968, where he seems to know he's going to die. Well, if he knew he was going to die, then why didn't he have a structure in place so that he could be assassinated and the movement would not fall apart, as it obviously did? And another legacy of King is this not following up on these kinds of judgments. We know about COINTELPRO, the U.S. government's operations to destroy black power organizations, including black organizations, including King's Southern Leadership, Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the Black Panther Party, of course. But we haven't prosecuted anyone over it. In Oakland, California, there was a church which was being spied on by the San Francisco Police Department because they were active in the anti-apartheid campaign in South Africa. This was found, and did the church follow up to make sure that the policemen involved were punished? The answer is no. I spoke to the pastor of the church myself. He didn't even know what happened.
Okay, Pat, thank you for your call from Portland in Oregon. In just the last couple of minutes of the program, we've got time to go to Louisa, who's called from Philadelphia.
Yes. I read Professor Farley's paper when it first came out, Send It to France, because whether one agrees with him or not, it makes one think, and it is necessary to review that. Very briefly, I was impressed. Numbers do count, and the statistics he quotes about income amongst blacks in the United States the number of blacks in jail, et cetera, are very meaningful, and one has to accept that things haven't worked out that well. I used to think that it was because the pressure had been let up, because the black community should have continued to put increasing pressure all the time, just like the women minorities, in fact, minorities should have.
So what's your question for Dr. Farley?
Yeah, one point only that I want to make, please. And Dr. Farley says we don't have to mix. Black children can go to black schools and learn, and white too. And I would have to say theoretically that's right. Except in my experience, and I'm also an academic, I have never seen that separate was equal. And that's my main objection to his point. Separate has always been unequal, and we know which one has been the suffering side. And that, you know, I'll be glad to listen to him. I have no more to say.
As I say, I'm not arguing that blacks and whites should learn separately. I'm saying that, philosophically speaking, there's nothing that says that if you sit next to a white person, you learn better, and that if you sit next to only people who look like you, you don't learn at all. But I agree completely with Louisa that the pressure has been let up, and that is the reason why everything stagnated after the demise of King, or maybe after 72, 73. In the 1980s, you have Ronald Reagan beginning to roll back affirmative action, positive discrimination, and he knows he can do that because there aren't going to be mass protests. What white America did was they set up a pressure valve. They said, before we let the cities boil over, now we're going to let a few people like Jonathan Farley live in our white world, become professors, and then they won't stir anything up.
Dr. Farley, we're going to have to leave it there. We're coming up to the news. Thank you so much, Dr. Farley, for being with us tonight, and Candice Allen, a writer from Americans Abroad for Obama. A final point. I think it's humorous Dr. Farley thinks there's been no advance in civil rights, seeing as he works at Caltech, one of the world's elite universities. Thanks for listening.